Hi, this is Paula Morrell, and welcome to the Tales from the South podcast.
Call on my heart, calling me home, taking my hand and leading me back where I belong. Been too long that I've been gone. Gotta make a new start, cause the call of my heart is calling me home. I gotta make a new start, cause the call of my heart is calling me home.
How's everybody doing tonight? So how about tonight's music by Shelley King? Do y'all like Shelley King? Shelley King has the unique honor of being the first woman to be appointed by the Texas legislature as the official Texas state musician. Shelley is a singer, songwriter, and band leader based in Austin, Texas. Shelley has toured all over North America, Japan, and Europe, but she grew up just down the road in Caddo Gap, Arkansas. More can be found at ShelleyKing.com. All right, well, welcome to Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, and to our second annual Shakespeare in the South on Tales from the South, where Southerners bring their own true bard stories to life. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, and tonight's show is sponsored by the Arkansas Shakespeare Theater, and I'm your host, Paula Morrell. On my left here, strumming his 1931 National Resonator, is blues guitarist Mark Simpson. Tonight's featured artist is Little Rock painter Doug Norton with his portrait of blues legend Junior Kimbrough, which is right here, this piece right here, and this piece is for sale. Our listeners can find out more about this painting and Doug on our website at talesfromthesouth.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern-style storytelling? This week, our writers find Shakespeare in their lives in some expected and some not-so-expected ways. All stories are true and told by the Southerners who lived them. Later tonight, Jay Jennings takes us back with him through some choice Shakespearean memories. But let's start the night with Hope Coulter, a pot of vegetable soup, and words bubbling up in Something Rich and Strange.
I stand at my kitchen sink, stirring vegetable soup. Down and around goes the ladle, till the vegetables swirl, and I skim a coating of oil from the top, while greasy Joan doth keel the pot. Where did that come from, I wonder? Who's Joan? And what does keel mean? Steam, redolent of tomato and onion, floats past my face. I grind in pepper, add thyme and basil, stirring carefully so the pot doesn't brim over. To wit, to woo, while greasy Joan doth keel. To wit, to woo. Scraps of words from I know not where. It doesn't matter exactly who Joan is or was, I decide. She's every woman who ever toiled over a cooking pot, which is a lot of women. And greasy Joan, hey, Mom, calls my son. Can you come sign this stuff for my English class? Sure, let me get to a stopping place. We got our reading list for this semester. English class in high school means literature, with a capital L. And literature means one's acquaintance with Shakespeare is no longer left up to chance. One is officially introduced. As to an eccentric great uncle who might bequeath you some fortune, and for whom you dress up and present yourself in the formal living room. Ninth grade, Romeo and Juliet. A great tragedy of star-crossed love, our teacher says. Ha, we know about love, its groping and its urgencies. Are we expected to remove our attention from the real issues of love, like who's going to homecoming and who went parking over the weekend? and focus instead on columns of heavily annotated text in Perspectives on Literature? Please. In the classroom, we fidget, called up one by one to recite our memorized passages. Sherry Lee, head JV cheerleader, eases a lock of hair behind her shoulder and breathes, "Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?" Billy Zachary edges to the front of the room and mutters, "But soft what light through yonder window breaks, it is the east and Juliet is the sun." That summer, at 14, I slouch in an auditorium seat in Lake Charles, Louisiana, waiting to see my first Shakespeare play. Students at the Governor's Program for Gifted Children are staging The Tempest. The director, that white kid with a fro who just rushed back to the lighting booth, is barely older than the actors, a local boy named Tony Kushner, home for the summer from college in New York. I'm not expecting much fun. Shakespeare sounds kind of heavy. Then the curtain rises onto a bright tumble of movement. Barefoot teenagers in slickers dash around stage, climbing up and down the rigging of a makeshift ship and shouting to one another about a coming storm. From the first pelting of water onto the stage to Prospero's last misty blessing, I'm mesmerized. Oh, brave new world that has such people in it. 10th grade means Julius Caesar. The boys in our class are happier. There's war and death, more politics and less love. In 11th grade with Macbeth, things get better yet. Witches, murder, depravity. About as good as anything on Dark Shadows or Night Gallery. Finally, between my class and college stretches the gauntlet of our senior year, guarded by the looming figure of Mrs. Hansel B. O'Quinn, the 12th grade English teacher. My brother has paved the way for me with Mrs. O'Quinn, as older siblings so often kindly do. 5 years earlier, he asked if he could earn extra credit in her class by submitting, his words, a report on reincarnation with you and Queen Victoria as the prime example. I have trouble not thinking of this as I watch Miss O'Quinn in her brocaded suit dress, enthroned on her wooden stool in English 4, her hair upswept from her pale forehead, her blue eyes glinting like frost. Her wooden pointer leads us, scepter-like, through Hamlet's gnarly syllables. Oh, that this too solid flesh would melt, thaw, and resolve itself into a dew. When Gloucester's eyes are gouged out and cling leer, she reigns calmly over our squealing and retching. Thankfully, such high drama is not the stuff of my life. Tonight, a soup supper on an ordinary Tuesday. After we eat, I call to my son, who has scuttled back to the living room. "I can look over those papers now. Can we do it later? I'm kind of busy." There's glee in his voice. "Busy with homework?" Not exactly. He stretched out on the couch, laughing over his iPhone, his face alight with the latest news from his friends, clearly in another world. So I go to check my own messages. New in my inbox is an email from one of my college roommates, titled, "Was the Hope Drunk?" Now, this is puzzling. Greta doesn't usually refer to me with an article. And she does usually capitalize my name. As to her question, I can't think of a time, in recent memory at least, when she would need to inquire into my sobriety, or lack thereof. A click of the mouse clears things up. "Was the Hope drunk?" writes Greta, a line from Macbeth. My Riverside edition has those words circled with a note saying, "Hi, Gret." Dana found it while reading my Riverside. She feels sure Hope marked my book. I fear she must be right. I remember college Shakespeare, turning the tissue-thin pages of the plays in English 12, poring over the sonnets in English 10, stunned by their range, their virtuosity, their heartbreak. However, I have no memory of scrawling a note in Greta's Shakespeare 33 years ago. How little I imagined picking up a pencil to leave my marginally witty note, that it would one day surprise not just Greta, but her teenage daughter, in a then faraway future, not to mention 52-year-old me. Hi. When I plop down on the couch to tell my son about the email, he nods and agrees. That's funny. So, Greta's daughter's reading Macbeth. I pick up the packet from his English teacher. What about you guys? What's next for you? Julius Caesar, says my son. It's about these people in ancient Rome. According to some of the juniors who read it last year, it's actually pretty good. Back at the sink, the soup pot is in soak. Hot water, a squirt of soap, and I scrub and turn it bottom up as a storm gale might keel a ship, capsizing it into enchantment. Still, who in the world is Joan? Then it hits me. 9. I'm lying on my bed, reading in the house by the bayou. The book, an anthology of children's poetry, is packed with poems divided into topics like playtime, pets, and holidays. I read rollicking metrics about animal crackers and cocoa, and free verse poems about fog and goblins. I lie on my right side, face propped on fist, until that hand tingles and I switch to the left and read on. Outside, cicadas clamor. A greenish light filtered through cypress trees slowly fills my room. Sprinkled throughout the book are a few poems that don't quite fit in. Their words and rhythms are enticingly off-kilter. Full fathom five, thy father lies. Where the bee sucks, there suck I. The name under these verses is William Shakespeare, whom I know from cartoons to be a man in tights, a ruffled collar, and shorts shaped like a pincushion. In the section on seasons, this Shakespeare has a little song about winter. No snowmen and mittens here. This wintertime is raw and chapped and peculiar. When icicles hang by the wall, and Dick the shepherd blows his nail, and Tom bears logs into the hall, and milk comes frozen home in pail. When blood is nipped and ways be foul, then nightly sings the staring owl, to whit, to woo, a merry note, while greasy Joan doth keel the pot. So there she is. I, at 9, have never seen an icicle, and I don't know who these people are. But the frumpy comfort of the scene, the chilly air in that kitchen becomes instantly real, as she still is, greasy Joan and grungy me, soup splashed and oil smudged, bound across 4 centuries by our common chore. Many tomorrows have crept by, some weary, stale, flat, and unprofitable, some inlaid with patterns of bright gold. My high school classmate, Billy Zachary, died young, but Sherry Lee is alive, I believe, and might yet friend me on Facebook. The earth has bubbles, as the water has, and these are of them. Whither are they vanished? Some things never change, I think, hanging up the dish towel and turning off the light. Today, I can Google Shakespeare's quotes and call up his tragedies and romances on the palm of my hand. But high school still unfolds in mundane majesty, from Romeo and Juliet to Hamlet, and certain off-kilter poetry still laces my thoughts and sends a delicious shiver up my spine.
Hope Coulter has published in such journals as North American Review, the Carolina Quarterly, and New Delta Review. Her honors include the Porter Prize for Literary Excellence and a Pushcart nomination. A native of Louisiana, she earned her bachelor's degree from Harvard University and her MFA from Queens University of Charlotte. She lives in Little Rock and teaches at Hendricks College in Conway, Arkansas. In our final story of the night, Jay Jennings' memories are fraught with comedy, tragedy, and parody in This Distracted Globe.
The New York Times recently quoted Dr. Joe C. Tsien, the author of A New Study of Memory in Old Age, as saying, "What our study suggests is that it's not just the strengthening of connections, but the weakening of the other sets of connections that creates a holistic pattern of synaptic connectivity that is important for long-term memory formation." Got that? What he means is this. Learning becomes harder as we grow older because we can't forget old stuff to make room for the new. That perhaps explains why the comedy albums I memorized in my youth, Jonathan Winters, Richard Pryor, and perhaps most regrettably, Cheech and Chong, remain seared into my cortices, summoned instantly from the ancient YouTube of my brain, while I will walk out of here tonight forgetting where I parked my car. I've tried to warn my niece about this. Her repeated viewings of Justin Bieber Never Say Never have resulted in an ability to recreate not only the songs, but all the dialogue in the documentary. And I fear she may run out of mental hard drive space before long. She has some interest and talent in acting, and I can picture the day when she'll be playing Juliet for Shakespeare in the Park at the Delacorte Theater in New York, and she'll get to the line, "Dost thou love me? I know thou wilt say aye, and I will take thy word." And instead she'll come out with, "You know you love me, I know you care, just shout whenever. And I'll be there, baby, 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 ooh." For my part, when I was in the eighth grade, as my niece is now, my acquaintance with Shakespeare began not with the words of the bard himself, but with a Shakespeare parody from one of those comedy albums. This particular album was called Not Insane or Anything You Want To by the West Coast-based comedy troupe, The Firesign Theater. I was turned on to The Firesign Theater by one of my hippest friends, or at least as hip as anyone can be in eighth grade. His mother was a single parent, which made the family quite exotic. And when I spent the night over at his house, we would sneak out at 2 a.m., and walked to Shipley's Donuts on Cantrell, which at that time was open 24 hours. Then we would walk home, listen to Firesign Theater albums all night, and eat our donuts. We had the munchies without the normal prerequisite. The four Firesign members were contemporaries and surrealist soulmates of Monty Python's Flying Circus, with a fondness for wordplay, non sequiturs, and layered soundboard tricks. One of their earlier albums was called Don't Crush the Dwarf, Hand Me the Pliers. Apparently, the Firesign Theater was even funnier if you were high. But it was plenty funny enough for me with the sugar high from my Shipley's. As an eighth grader, I was so square when the troupe members on Not Insane self-referentially call what they do dope humor, I took it to mean dopey humor. And some of it certainly was. Though I had not read any Shakespeare by the eighth grade, I'd somehow absorbed enough through the culture at large to appreciate the Firesign Theater's parody, a performance recorded before a live audience. Some sonic experimentation opens the album, followed by an announcement that the play will be performed in five acts, three of them unnatural. The convoluted plot of Anything You Want To involves a series of rulers named Edmund, including a bastard and one named Edmund Edmund, the appearance of ghosts, seasick sailors, poisoned chalices, and mistaken identity, and of course, swordplay. When one of the combatants calls out, "How about you?" the reply naturally is, "Gesundheit." Slightly more elevated, though, is a great parody of a soliloquy, equal parts Hamlet and Henry V, when Edmund Edmund is summoned to confront a ghost upon the battlements and is inspired to soliloquize after he is told by one of the guards, "Take care, master, that he lead thee not to L." And Edmund replies, "L? L? What's L? They tore it down. What's L to me or me to L? What then? As a tot was told me not to cross the moat. But then the monkey did bespeak me cast the moat from mine own eyes. So thus I crossed my eyes and double-crossed the monk who fell into the moat. Then soon they bade me warning I play not by myself. 'Twould make me blind. But I was deaf. So I jumped into the burning bush, and lo, although consumed, I rose again to bite another apple on yet another eve. I spit out half a snake, afraid of L. I've left my senses many times and dreamed I fought great monsters, pink behemoths, rats upon my bed. Who cares? Are we not men? If we fall, can we not rise again? Hot-headed, flushed with blood, we get it taking down, we'll stand it up, we'll get it any way we can. Saint Mickey, save me! That was my experience with Shakespeare when I took my first serious Shakespeare class in college at Vanderbilt, emphasis on serious. By sophomore year, I was convinced I wanted to be an English professor and a scholar, and so I had to put aside all foolish things and give Shakespeare the literary obedience his greatness demanded. I read Dr. Johnson, Hazlitt, and Arnold. I read Bloom, Bevington, and Bradley. And when one of my professors required us to memorize 50 lines of Shakespeare, I chose a 50-line monologue by the Duke of York in 2 Henry VI that contains lines like, "I have seduced a headstrong Kentishman, John Cade of Ashford, to make commotion as full well he can under the title of John Mortimer." As I trudged through it, when my professor asked me why I had chosen those lines, I told her, "I didn't think anybody else would do that speech." Perhaps it would become my scholarly specialty. And she said, "Well, you were right that no one else chose it. I don't remember a word of it now." For a later Shakespeare class, we were required to do an independent project. And I decided to write, with both the naivete and great ego of the college student, a soliloquy in iambic pentameter, you know, to help Shakespeare smooth out a rough spot in one of his plays. That professor wrote on my paper, "I don't know how to grade this, but I have to." And so he gave my "to be or not to be" a B. Meanwhile, my friend Matt, who was also in the class, chose to do a parody of Richard III on video. In those days, you had to check the shoulder-mounted bazooka-sized video camera out of the Vanderbilt AV warehouse and have someone tote the steamer trunk-sized tape recorder housing behind you. Matt lugged them around for days of shooting and staged the final battle scene at Nashville's Centennial Park near campus in front of the city's replica of the Parthenon. Instead of making Richard humpbacked and limping, Matt decided to give him a more extreme physical problem to deal with: the absence of arms. During one soliloquy at a meal, Richard periodically interrupts his speech and calls out, "French fry," after which a servant feeds him one. And during the climactic battle, in a bit that is particularly reminiscent of Monty Python, Richard instructs an adjutant to stand directly behind him, chest pressed to back, to provide limbs for Richard's hand-to-hand combat. The professor gave him an A. It was probably around this time that I began to realize I have no head for Shakespeare, no scholarly chops. I still love to see the plays performed, though. I have probably attended more than 100 productions. I have stood for the duration of a 3-hour performance of Coriolanus at the Vienna Opera House. I have seen a dozen plays over the years by the Royal Shakespeare Company in London and Stratford-upon-Avon. I saw Jonathan Pryce in Taming of the Shrew, Richard Griffiths in Henry VIII, Derek Jacobi in Much Ado About Nothing, and Kevin Kline sliding across the stage at the Delacorte Theater in Much Ado on a rainy summer night in Central Park. If I've committed very few of Shakespeare's own words to memory, that doesn't mean I don't have strong memories of Shakespeare's words. I just prefer my Shakespeare, comedy, tragedy, or parody, on stage rather than on the page, performed rather than dissected, with my butt not in a carrel in the library stacks, but in an orchestra seat. Or, even better, on a blanket under, as Romeo says, the vaulty heaven so high above our heads. At heart, I'm a groundling.
Jay Jennings is a freelance writer whose journalism, book reviews, and humor have appeared in many newspapers and magazines, including the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the Oxford American. He is also the author of Carry the Rock, Race, Football, and the Soul of an American City, published in 2010. Most recently, he edited and wrote the introduction to a collection of Charles Portis's work, Escape Velocity, a Charles Portis Miscellany, which was published in October 2012 by Butler Center Books. So how about our stories and storytellers tonight? Thank you to our writers, Hope Coulter and Jay Jennings. Thank you to our live audience, and thank you to UALR Public Radio. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, and our official media sponsor is AY Magazine, Arkansas's leading lifestyle publication at aymag.com. Additional support provided by William F. Lehman Public Library, the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, the Writers Colony at Derry Hollow, and the Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. Tonight's show is sponsored by the Arkansas Shakespeare Theater in conjunction with the Bard Ball 2013 Taming of the Brew. More can be found at arkshakes.org. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Stitcher, and you can download and listen to our podcast on our website. More can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week at Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
We're back in the woods. Down in Tennessee, who knew the smoke would overtake me? That one little spark raged out of control, and now that passion burns down in my soul. I'm building a fire, building a fire, and starting to care. Starting to catch, I knew I was in trouble from the very start. You looked in my eyes, saw straight to my heart. Now the fever rising versus me.
Writer accommodations provided by Robin Wood Bed and Breakfast. More at robinwoodbnb.com. Experience Tales in person as a member of our live audience. Schedule and ticket information can be found at our website, talesfromthesouth.com. Thanks for helping keep the art of Southern style storytelling alive. And we'll see you next week, either on this station or at Starving Artist Cafe, for another edition of Tales from the South.